Apple is sitting on a ton of cash.
And now it's time to spend.
From APM, American Public Media, I'm Jeremy Hobson in Los Angeles.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith in New York. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Monday, March 19th.
Coming up, one reporter's search for the truth about Apple's operations in China.
What's next for the European debt crisis?
And maybe we are still smarter than computers.
These stories and more coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
Apple said this morning it's got a plan for its $100 billion cash pile. It's going to give shareholders a $2.65 dividend, and it will buy back some of its own stock. Henry Blodgett is CEO of Business Insider, and he joins us now from New York with more. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, great to have you, Henry. So first of all, I guess there was a lot of curiosity about what Apple was going to do with its cash. What do you make of what they're doing?
There certainly was, and in tantalizing Apple fashion. Of course, they announced a big conference call where they're going to announce it, so everybody's hanging on every word. Basically, this is a company that has so much cash, they don't know what to do with it. And shareholders have been increasingly asking for them to do something with it, and they've now come out with a very conventional response to that, which is to pay a dividend and buy back some stock to offset the option grants that they give to employees.
And is that as useful for a company like Apple as, say, buying up another company?
Well, the amazing thing is that Apple has so much cash right now that they will not hinder their ability to buy another company in any way. Basically, even paying out $11 a share approximately in cash per year and buying back $10 billion of stock, their cash balance should continue to grow rapidly over the next few years. So they haven't turned off any options.
Henry Blodgett, CEO of Business Insider, thanks so much.
Thank you.
It emerged on Friday that Marketplace's China correspondent Rob Schmitz had discovered a big lie. A prominent Apple critic, writer Mike Daisy, claimed he had seen underage workers and employees who had been poisoned at factories where Apple products are made in China. His story was featured on the public radio program This American Life.
Well, Rob did some digging and discovered none of it was true. Here he is confronting Daisy.
Kathy says that you did not talk to workers who were poisoned by hexane.
That's correct.
This American Life had to retract its entire show on the subject. Rob is with us now from Shanghai to talk more about all of this. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, let's start with Mike Daisy, the center of this investigation. How has he responded?
Well, on Saturday, which was a day after our Marketplace report aired and the same day that many stations were carrying Marketplace's collaboration with This American Life, Mike Daisy had a scheduled performance of his monologue. He inserted a prologue that he read before the performance, and here's part of it.
I wanted to let you know that This American Life is airing an episode this weekend that calls into question the veracity of some of the personal experiences that you're going to hear about in this monologue. And I want you to understand that what's being called into question is the personal experiences, the facts of what the situation is in China in manufacturing are undisputed, and they're reinforced by the New York Times, CNN, NPR.
And he left out Marketplace.
Well, Rob, I think one of the interesting things about this is something that you pointed out in your story on Friday, which is that while what he had said was not technically true, a lot of the things he was talking about were actually happening. They reflected real things that were happening at these factories in China.
Yeah, that's completely right. And I think that's an important thing that we shouldn't lose sight of here, that many of the things that Daisy lied about seeing have actually happened in China. There have been poisoned workers, and Apple's own audits have caught underage workers at factories making Apple products. But here's another fact that also might be missing from this whole conversation. From what we know, these are rare occurrences in Apple's supply chain. Life at factories that make Apple products is not all hunky-dory, but the truth is much more complicated than how Daisy's portrayed the situation.
Well, bring us back to the moment that you figured out that something was amiss. Why did you start investigating what he had said on This American Life?
Well, you know, I heard his segment, Daisy's segment on This American Life, and I immediately thought some of the details didn't seem right. So I decided to just Google the name of Daisy's translator who appears in the monologue. Her name is Kathy. And then I added the words translator and Shenzhen to her name, and there she was. I found her. The next day, I was at the gates of Foxconn in Shenzhen with a copy of Daisy's monologue. Kathy was with me, and after going point by point through his monologue, I discovered many of the details, according to Kathy, never happened.
What has Foxconn said about all this?
Well, they've responded to the Chinese press about this, and a spokesman said that he told the press that the truth has prevailed and that Daisy's lies were exposed. And then he added that he didn't think the reports about this had gone far enough to find out, according to him, what exactly is the truth.
Rob, do you think any of this is going to have an impact on workers at Chinese factories?
It's hard to say. Foxconn had promised a pay raise to its employees after Apple was under a lot of scrutiny, thanks in part to Daisy's efforts. But just last week, there were reports that hundreds of Foxconn workers at a factory in northern China protested because they didn't receive the raise that was promised. Labor rights groups have said they're now worried that Mike Daisy's fabrications could actually hurt efforts to improve working conditions throughout China's manufacturing sector. But it's too early to tell.
Rob Schmitz is the Marketplace China correspondent based in Shanghai. Thanks, Rob, and thanks for all your great reporting.
Thanks, Jeremy.
And we've got Rob's full report at marketplace.org.
A bitter showdown is brewing over the future of Yahoo. A hedge fund investor with a 6% stake in the internet giant is demanding to take over a block of seats on Yahoo's board of directors. Marketplace's Bob Moon has more.
If Yahoo doesn't respond to his demand this week, activist investor Dan Loeb says he'll start seeking support from fellow investors. He wants four of the firm's 11 board seats and insists a shakeup is needed to make Yahoo great again.
Given the problems they've had the last few years, I can understand that sense of shareholder frustration.
Charles Elson is a corporate governance expert at the University of Delaware. He says ever since Yahoo botched a lucrative buyout offer from Microsoft in 2008, it's been slipping behind the competition. And while the threat of a proxy fight could distract Yahoo execs from fixing the company, it could be just what they need.
I do think these things have more value than not, because I think it forces a company to reexamine dogma. There's nothing wrong with reexamining dogma, particularly if dogma created the dissidents to begin with.
Elson concedes the dissident shareholders have their work cut out for them.
It's going to take a lot of effort and a good deal of money to go out and convince everyone that their approach is the correct one.
The struggle could take months and culminate at Yahoo's annual shareholder meeting in June. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
Shipping giant UPS is acquiring Dutch rival TNT Express for $6.8 billion. It's all about getting more global, along with the companies it serves. Marketplace's Scott Tong has that story for us.
In a business where size matters, UPS is tops in America. But the U.S. market will grow at an anemic pace of 1-2%, says Dutch analyst Andre Mulder at Kepler Capital Markets. So the future is global. That's one reason UPS is gobbling up Europe's number two deliverer, TNT Express.
In Europe, we're talking about growth rates of, let's say, 3-5%. There is still scope for a consolidation in that market.
Now, with a company named TNT, it's tempting to go with some explosion metaphor, followed by forehead smack. But the fact is, logistics and delivery is really booming outside Europe, in Asia.
That market is growing fastest. We're looking at growth rates of 15-20%, but there are not that many companies available.
Meaning there are no big companies in Asia to buy. So to compete there, the world's biggest firms, UPS, FedEx, DHL, have to grow the old-fashioned way, build business from the ground up. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
We have spent a lot of time this year looking at the European debt crisis. The actual numbers aren't all that different, but investors seem to be moving on. Worries about oil prices are taking center stage, and Greece's prime minister says the country is well on its way to economic recovery.
Our London bureau chief, Stephen Beard, joins us now to talk Europe. Good morning, Stephen.
Hello, Stacey.
Stephen, why this burst of optimism in Athens?
Well, the Prime Minister of Greece has to sound upbeat about the Greek economy, doesn't he, while keeping a straight face. But in an interview with the Financial Times, Mr. Papademos does sound particularly confident. He says now the country's secured a second bailout. The large majority of Greeks are knuckling down to the agreed budget cuts and economic reforms. And he says Greece is halfway along the road to recovery.
Well, I'm guessing not everyone shares that optimism.
No, indeed. And here's one pessimist. Andrew Hilton of the CSFI think tank says Greece is trapped in a downward spiral that will make it very difficult to pay off its debt.
Greece's economy is still shrinking at about 5% a year. There's no growth on the horizon, and we aren't out of the woods yet. This isn't the end of the crisis. In fact, you could say it's really only the end of the beginning of the crisis.
And he's not the only pessimist. The head of PIMCO, the giant bond investment fund, says the latest Greek bailout package will fall apart fairly quickly. And he says Portugal is now going to need a second bailout too.
Our European Bureau Chief Stephen Beard in London. Thank you, Stephen.
Okay, Stacey.
More than a year after Ireland received a bailout, unemployment in the country has risen to well over 14%. Nearly 1,500 people leave the Emerald Isle every week to look for work. Reporter Christopher Worth brings us this story from one soon-to-be emigrant.
My name is Peter Sweeney. I'm 23 years of age, and I am a carpenter. But there's not much work in the construction industry in Ireland. So I decided to get myself over to Australia. The money for carpenters is really, really good over there. They could get up to $35 an hour. Plenty of work, and most of my friends have gone already. The dog smells really bad.
My name is Edel, and I'm Peter's mum. There's no future for him, I know, but Australia is so far away, and I'm annoyed about it. I'm annoyed at the banks, what they've done. And my son did say to me that he's not going to stay here and pay the banks back.
All right, have you got the keys, actually? Tonight is my going away party. We're going to have a few beers in a pub with some of my friends. I feel angry about having to leave. I mean, I always thought that I'd travel, but I never thought I would have to leave forcefully, like, you know, to work.
Yeah, so it's a really nice pub, like, come on in.
My name is Sam, I'm a friend of Peter's. It's horrible to see some of your good mates go, you know. I've seen a lot of mates go, and it kind of makes me want to go away myself.
I feel a little bit sad because I've so many good friends that I won't be able to, you know, stay in contact with, but, you know, I really want to make it over there, and, you know, I want to be a working man, and so I think I'll be okay.
We're going to miss you, Sweeney.
We're going to miss you.
We're going to miss you, Sweeney. What a man. What a man.
Christopher Worth produced that report. And, Jeremy, you should prepare yourself for the venti wheatgrass. You ready for that? Starbucks opened its first juice bar today in Bellevue, Washington. Huh. It's called Evolution Fresh. And you cannot get scones or lattes there. It's just juice smoothies and healthy salads and soups, which sounds interesting. And I plan to check it out right after I finish my caramel latte.
You're going
to
stick with the grande lattes, huh, Stacey?
Well, you know, maybe one day I will graduate into the world of waking up with wheatgrass, but not today.
There's a debate going on in the Senate this week about the Export-Import Bank, and it has turned into a bruising corporate battle between airplane maker Boeing and some of its biggest customers. Here's our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale.
The Export-Import Bank offers cheap loans to foreign companies that buy American. The bank might underwrite a low-interest loan to Ethiopian Airlines, for example, to order a Boeing airplane. That's good for manufacturing jobs here at home. But it gives Ethiopian Airlines an advantage over its American competitors who have to pay more for their planes. Aerospace analyst Richard Abulafia says that's why U.S. airlines that fly overseas, like Delta or U.S. Airways, are lobbying against expanding the EXIM Bank.
It's unquestionably true that jetliner manufacturing is a huge job creator and a big engine of economic growth, and exports are the overwhelming bulk of that. On the other hand, you can't pick winners without hurting somebody at home. And from the airline's perspective, that's exactly what's going on.
The Senate is considering a $40 billion boost to the EXIM Bank's loan portfolio, and politicians favor anything that creates manufacturing jobs. That's why Abulafia expects the amendment to pass. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
And finally, Stacey, you know, there is one thing that we still do better than computers, and that is crossword puzzles.
Oh, really? Oh.
Over the weekend in New York, 600 top crossword solvers went up against a computer program called Dr. Phil. That's F-I-L-L. And Dr. Phil came in a paltry 141st.
Wow.
Yeah. According to the New York Times, the computer program struggles with humor and unusual letter arrangements, which I guess is something we should keep in mind when we when the world gets taken over by computers. We can just say things in humorous
no
ways. Exactly.
Do not try to joke with them.
But this story did make me wonder what the human Dr. Phil would have said about this.
This is a problem. It's an issue. You know what you deal with problems? You work the problem. That's what you do. You don't judge it. You don't put people down about it. You work the problem and you get it under control.
So there you go, Stacey. Some very good advice from the real Dr. Phil to the computer Dr. Phil. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith in New York. And this is the Marketplace Midday Update.
This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.